This is Table Talk, your premier competitive Warhammer 40K Houston podcast. We review new content and releases, interview some of the brightest minds in Houston 40K, and talk gameplay and tactics to help you level up your Warhammer 40K game. This is a Team Eden production, sponsored by Eden Games. Now for your Table Talk host, Chad Stubblefield.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Table Talk. As sometimes and usually always, I am your host, Chad Stubblefield. And today I'm going to be joined by Brandon Smith. Brandon, say hi to the people.
Hello, people.
See, it didn't even work. So I went and I turned the volume off on the phone, and here we are. Still going to ring. So so today we're going to talk about... I'm going to leave that in. I think that's great. Today we're going to talk about whatever is going on in the Warhammer universe, right? So I just came off of LVO and then haven't looked at anything. I haven't really been paying attention to anything. World Eaters are out. I didn't know that happened.
Are they actually out?
Yeah. Like they're
are
out
they released
weekend,
like today, right?
Yeah. So I didn't know until I walked into my other job, which is at a game store. So I walked in, I was like, oh wow, World Eaters are out. So that's a whole thing that I guess I have to worry about. I don't know how good they look, or
I don't know if you really have to worry about them.
Maybe as a person that plays elves, I should probably just ask what their threat radius is and stay out of it the entire game.
Pretty much.
Okay. So
it's a pretty one-dimensional army honestly.
It seems like it. I watched like I think a quarter of a battle report that Art of War did. That was like Drukhari, it was some nonsense Nick slapped together, and then some nonsense that Mark Perry slapped together, and well, it seemed cool.
So like the gist of it is you can build it two different ways. You can either build it actual like World Eaters, or there's like another sub-faction of World Eaters you can build it as. And like each one gives you access to a different set of stratagems, relics, and everything. I think each one only has like three or four relics, warlord traits, same thing.
It's like six strats in the whole book, right? Like some abnormally low amount of strats
per like type of world eater. Which so there's only two, so like between the two of them, there's like 12 or 16 strats.
Interesting.
Like for the whole book.
Wow.
I think it's a named character. It's like one of the HQs that's not Angron is actually low-key one of the best things in the book.
Oh, Avocado, Lord Avocado.
Yeah.
The guy, he flies.
That's so he flies, and his warlord trait is him and two other units pre-game move their full movement.
That's obscene.
Yeah.
That's a really
so
good.
So you pretty much get two fully loaded rhinos, load them down with berserkers, and you just go.
Interesting. Well, I mean, as a person that plays melee armies, I mean, how do you assess that? You think that's good? I mean, it seems good.
I mean, there's a reason why you always take Death Company and Blood Angels. Pre-game moves forward are always really good for melee armies.
Yeah. That makes sense. I mean, getting to meet those engagements sooner.
Yeah. Then there's like a couple other cute things you can do, like if you do end up taking Angron. Because, like, you know, you can mix in Khorne demons with them.
Right.
And turns out Angron is a warp locust.
Yeah, they've been doing that. I mean, the Master of Possessions in the CSM book has the Warp Locust keyword.
Yeah. So, like, the cute thing with him is, like, you just bring him and, like, Scarbrand.
Okay.
And you just, like, he scoots. Like, Angron can just be in your opponent's face turn one, and, like, Scarbrand also in their face turn one.
Well, so that's the Arcs of Omens thing, right? So the only way to accomplish that would be to take an Arcs of Omen detachment of World Eaters plus demons, correct?
Well, it's It's a patrol of demons, I think.
That's what I mean, a patrol of demons. But yeah. your main detachment would have to be world eaters. You can't do vice versa.
Right, and it still has to follow the rule of the 25% or less of your army can be demons to keep your other rules.
Cool. Okay. Yeah. So I have to say, if you like the nonsense you're hearing so far, make sure you check out the Table Talk Discord, because that is being, I oftentimes link it wherever the podcast is posted. Also, make sure you check out Edengames, edengames.com, where you can find all your wargaming hobbying needs. I realized I didn't shill at the beginning of this. I'm so out of practice that I didn't even give acknowledgement to the sponsors before we just jumped into everything. And then,
we should probably do that.
Yeah. Right. And then make sure you check out Rexer's Lasers. So that's rexerslasers.com, or you can find Joey Rexer on Facebook if you want something more customized. But he makes game aids, terrain. I mean, everything short of a mat for the game at this point. He's made me bases, upgraded bases, because Eldar needed to be on bigger bases randomly. It's great. So everything he makes is super useful. Make sure you check out his website. And let's dive back to the discussion. So, Brandon, what are you looking at for upcoming events, right? What events do you have? I mean, you have one sooner than I do.
Yeah, so I actually have one next weekend. I think it's actually called the Heroic Scale Gamers Open.
Okay.
It's at Dragon's Lair, which is a local place. Well, it's a franchise, but we have one locally here. And I'm going to be taking custodies to it.
Oh, okay.
It's some interesting terrain, which is another subject, but you know.
Well, so Brandon, real quick, I have to pause you because I know personally that you're a Blood Angels player, and how could they come off the back of winning LVO and you're not just like jamming in them at events, right?
So I think Blood Angels have to adapt now with Arcs of Omen because they did remove some of our really good Our one really good strat for Blood Angels, which is a Fury of the Lost. So for anybody that's unfamiliar, Fury of the Lost, you would get... sorry, my phone's going off with Discord notifications. I think it was... Yeah, you would get 3 points for killing something with a Death Company unit. You would get 4 points if you killed two things with Death Company units. In that battle round. And then you would get 1 point if a Death Company unit died that battle round.
Right.
So you could easily max 15 normally pretty consistently combine. And then like you combine that with Shock Tactics, which is the Space Marine specific, get 4 points for pretty much taking your opponent off an objective and taking it from them. So... You would normally combine that, but now we don't have Fury of the Lost, so now you're kind of having to play differently with the army. You're not just taking three units of Death Company plus like the Death Company character of your choice.
Right. Well, that makes sense. So what is this... describe the interesting terrain, because the Heroic Scale Gaming or Dragon's Lair Open is next week, right?
Correct.
So describe to everyone this pressing event's terrain, because I know the event's going to be streamed as well. So if you want to watch it, make sure you check it out. That will be on the Heroic Scale Gaming YouTube page, I believe.
Yes, that's where it was last time.
This time they have an official judge staff, so that the interesting part is that the organizers themselves will both be able to be shoutcasting, essentially, while the actual event's going on. So I'll still be able to watch it. I'll be there in spirit.
Well, you can cheer on everybody else that's on stream. I doubt I ever do good enough to be there. You know.
But yeah, talk to us about the terrain and your ideology looking at custodies in Arcs of Omen.
Yeah, so we'll start off with the terrain because it's pretty straightforward. It's almost GW terrain, except for each of the big boxes has a large door on the front side. And then on one of the two big boxes on your side of the battlefield is going to be the door facing essentially towards your opponent. So it's going to be really beneficial for shooting style armies. Some melee armies are going to be fine with it. Ones that will be able to hide and like pop out where they need to. But every time you have an objective in that one building that's facing your opponent, it's going to be kind of rough. Be a lot of back and forth. I do think that the terrain obviously panders to shooting armies as opposed to melee armies. I don't think I'd like to be putting a bunch of Blood Angels in that building to be shot at.
Yeah, especially without your crutch, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and especially now with no armor of contempt. Like,
yeah, that's the crutch. That's the big loss for a lot of these armies.
Yeah. Well, that was one of the big things, like playing Blood Angels and Custodes as my two main armies. Like, all my stuff that had two ups in cover most of the time, like max they would go up to four up most of the time. So it's like, I'd pretty much just be playing Custodes with a lot cheaper chassis.
Yeah, that's true.
So, which is kind of where I'm excited to actually play Custodes again for once now.
Right.
Because their four up invuln actually matters now.
There's so much AP2 across the army that previously kind of got neutered by Armor of Contempt existing, and now Custodes have been restored to their rightful place as the power armor faction, right?
Right.
Because before, I mean, taking Marines past a 4-up with Armor of Contempt in cover was a near impossible task. And so Custodes have now, and Black Templars? Like, Black mm-hmm. Templars are interesting again, right? Because now your army-wide 5-up invuln vow now means something.
Right.
When Armor of Contempt came out, people were laughing at the 5-up invuln vow. Yeah, that's well, you're never going to take me to a 5-up. I mean, you would literally have to have AP 5 or greater. It's insane. So I can understand the appeal of playing what is now back to being a hyper-durable army, especially in today's landscape, which I think is less killy with Tyranids not roaming around as much.
Right, which makes me super happy. The less mortal wounds running around, the better, because I'm actually not taking the shield host that is good against mortal wounds.
Yeah.
I'm actually going to be taking emissaries. So that should be interesting.
That makes sense. The psychic landscape got neutered. So, like, Eldar psychers went up, Tyranids kind of got tossed to the side. A lot of the stuff that's best in demons is actually a lot of the Khorne stuff, like their bloodthirster remains intact, so you're not having to worry about a psychic phase. Thousand Suns are still interesting, but they're not as good with the change to flamer, so I actually think it makes sense to just kind of say I'm fine having a 6-up.
Right.
But yeah, walk us through it. So what's the Arcs of Omen list for Custodes look like when you can barely fill three slots of anything?
Well, let me tell you about how many troops I'm bringing.
Yeah.
So 750 points of the list is all in the troop slot. It's just five units of three Sagittarum. Obviously, Trajan's coming along, Shield Captain on bike. I have two units of Virtus Praetors, all with salvos. Which, one of those units, 9 times out of 10, is going to be forward, well, moving forward through our 2-CP strat to pregame move something in their full movement.
Right.
Then I ended up bringing a unit of Witch Seekers because I had, what was it, like 55 points that I could just throw at something.
Mm-hmm.
So it just kind of worked out perfect. And they also get the pregame move for 6 inches so I can run onto a point before the game even starts. Just kind of always kind of nice. Let's see. That's pretty much the list. It's pretty straightforward. pretty cut and clean. Oh, I'm only bring one dreadnought.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's a departure from what we've seen.
Yeah. I tried three dreadnoughts in a test game with Ryan. And with how much shooting there is and everything, the dreadnoughts are just always going to be vulnerable.
Right.
So I'd almost rather have a really fast, like, second unit of bikes that can follow up the first unit.
That makes sense. I actually like that ideology a lot, because you're always going to emissaries unlocks. I'll let you go over everything else that it unlocks, but the one of the biggest things and the biggest abuses I've seen with emissaries is unlocking a pregame move with your unit via stratagem, and then moving a unit of bikes up and then moving them into your opponent's face and then somehow charging them up their butt. Right? Like, that's, I mean, this unit of bikes is going to find the target that it wants to find unless that target is wrapped. And it's so funny to see you pivot to emissaries off of, you know, so much time playing Blood Angels, where Death Company fulfill a very similar role. Having the ability to alpha strike the opponent and get that advantage very early when you're going first is so important, because if someone has bottom of turn, it's often seen as an advantage.
Right.
It's an advantage for many secondaries with a lot of armies. It's an advantage in that you score round five at the end of the game rather than at the beginning of your turn. And so I think if you... having access to an alpha strike, much in the way that Steven Box's Eldar did, then you basically get to say, especially with Steven Box's Eldar, which I think he unlocked what's probably going to be meta moving forward for Eldar.
Oh, yeah.
I being able to say, oh, I won the first turn roll off, well, good game, is a great thing to have, because, cool, I'll play Warhammer with you if I go second, but if I go first, I'm going to make sure this game's over, right?
Well, and see, that's kind of another thing too, is like, if you're playing against another army that doesn't have like a crazy, like, charge threat radius turn one, you could just still pregame move if you go second and then sit the bikes in the middle of the board where they can't easily be shot.
Right.
And they're still just in your opponent's face turn one.
I like it. So tell us the everything else that Emissaries unlocks, because I know that a lot of people, unless you've played against Robert Moreland, you have no clue what Emissaries do.
Yeah. Which I am kind of stealing this list from Robert Moreland, because, like, I've lost against it, and it just seems neat.
Yeah, he'd be okay with it. He's absolutely the type that would accept it as praise.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, he'd be like, oh, well, yeah, finally you... took you forever to get to the decision I made a long time ago.
Yeah, he's like, I figured this out forever ago. What took you so long?
He was literally telling us, what was it, Dallas of last year?
Oh, yeah. He was preaching, like, bring Sagittarum. 21 Sagittarum.
Yeah.
And I was like, what are you talking about?
I was like, sir, I'm trying to smoke a cigarette. What are you doing out here?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, telling us about Sagittarum. I don't even know what that unit is, and then here we are today, and it's kind of bog standard for this type of list.
Yeah, because, like, that was right after the original Custodes nerf, and, like, he was just like, yeah, just bring, like, 29 Sagittarum. I was like, that's all your points. He's like, it doesn't matter, just bring Trajan and 29 Sagittarum. I was like, oh, okay.
But yeah, what are the other emissary benefits?
So they always fight first.
It's great.
Army-wide, yeah. I mean, especially for those bikes that are going to be getting in.
Most things don't charge you and just, like, bog standard outright kill you. And so being able to alternate in your opponents, like, whenever they charge you with multiple things is hilarious.
Oh, yeah. I've caught up Blood Angel players like that before. I'm like, hey, like, don't forget, I fight first. And they're like, well, that's fine. And then all of a sudden, it's not fine.
Right.
Because then, like, their first attack, they underkill something because of all the defensive stats of Custodes. And then, like, I crack back into their other unit. And they're like, oh, no, you killed half the unit. Now I can't kill that unit either.
Right. No, I mean, it makes sense. And then something, something, something modifiers, right? You don't take modifiers?
Yeah, so I can ignore any or all modifiers to hit or and wound. Period.
That's great. Sorry, Velikor.
Yeah, like, oops.
Toughness 7 suddenly looks really bad. That's well, cool. So what's your, I want to ask you real quick, what's their preferred fighting style, and does it come into play as much as Emperor's Chosen?
So it does because the way custodians like to play Warhammer is normally you're taking banners. And their preferred fighting stance, which I can never remember the names of all of them except for Rendax, but you know,
there's Conservai, Dakotarai, Rendax. Those are the three most important.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, this one's one that you didn't name.
Right, because it's specifically like great emissaries, right?
Yeah. So you can advance or fall back into an action. Or the other side of the stance, or the other stance of the fighting style is being able to shoot and do an action. And obviously, in Custodes, once per game, you can double up on that. So most of the time, you're just taking that in your first slot, advancing onto points, doing the action, still able to shoot, and just everything. So.
So, Brandon, tell me, how do you feel about... 3 Hunters of Beasts. The possibility of like 3 Armigers in your list. How does that sound? Because I think it's interesting.
So I think it's really interesting. I really do. And it's one of those things where, especially now that some of the secondaries changed.
Oh, it was Conservai. I did name that one.
Is it Conservai?
It is Conservai.
Oh, well, I don't even know
that. Yeah, there's only 3 that matter.
I don't know the name of them. Like I said, yeah, I can only ever remember Rendax and Dakotarai.
But yeah, go on about Baby Knights and Hunters of Beasts and how I think it's really good.
Yeah, yeah, like, I'm not denying that it's really good, especially the way they changed secondaries. So I think it's more interesting now than it was before. It was already kind of interesting. But I think it's more interesting now because the way grind works... Now, if you get a kill with a troop unit or an Armiger unit, then you get a CP.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
Like, just if you get a kill. That's like not even if you get the grind points.
Shooting. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. So, like, that's kind of one of the reasons why I'm bringing a bunch of Sagittarum, just because I didn't feel like finding Armigers.
Yeah, we don't know anyone possibly who could have assisted you with that.
I do, but, you know.
And literally, cool David, too, right? Models. Like, everybody on our team in some capacity owns Knights except for me because I sold mine to Logan.
Yeah.
Another person on our team. Like, that's crazy to me.
But, I think it's really good. Like, it's like, a it's lot of shots, especially with the bonus against vehicles and everything, with Iron Hands probably going to be on their way. Because, oh man, did Iron Hands get buffed by the Space Marine changes.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest issue with Iron Hands is the secondary, right? Like, is, what is it called? Something... Codex or
Codex Warfare, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Being able to stay in Dev Doctrine means that you just like score 2 points every time you kill a unit.
Yeah. Well, you take that plus now. What's the other one? Oaths of Moment got changed again back to its original wording.
Yeah. Which its original wording was, did you go second? You score 15. Did you go first? You score 11.
Yeah.
like, it might as well be what the secondary says. That's all interesting. You're probably going to run into Iron Hands, I imagine, at Dragon Slayer. A lot of the Houston people are, like, jumping ship from whatever they were doing before. And,
yeah.
And I've seen them pick up Iron Hands more at events.
Which is interesting, like, the army-wide, was it 6-up feel no pain?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty good.
Well, in rerolling in Dev Doctrine is great because you just stay in it all game.
Dev Doctrine, yeah.
Yeah, starting on objectives with infiltrators is just like the most disgusting thing I've seen in a long time now, because you're like, cool, that's my troop choice, which means the objective's sticky. Like, it's wild. And if, like, you're playing against an army that can't get over there, then that's your eight you are already scoring, except for those infiltrators get to pivot into the middle or, like, move back wherever you need them to help screen. And it's wild. It's wild to me. It's a whole new world. How what is the structure of Dragon's Lair? Is it six rounds or?
Yeah, it's six rounds. I think it's just straight six rounds. I don't think there's a cut or anything, if I remember correctly. Cool. I've been so busy recently, I haven't honestly even looked at what missions we're playing.
So that's the bad part about our team is we have a very like, work oriented team, and all of our jobs, like I believe that Ryan's does something at HEB, but like the retail side of it for him and Logan gets busier towards the end of the year, beginning of the year. Brian works for a delivery company, so end of the year, beginning of the year, very busy. It's and then I just started a new job. So it's, and you're an electrician. So it's hilarious how we're all like we just shut down from, I think, November to the end of January. There's like a dead zone in our Discord where like we don't even talk to each other.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. Like, we don't talk to each other and we just happen to show up at the same events and we're like, hey, what are y'all doing?
Yeah. How have you been? You know? How are you expecting, because you're going to Dragon's Lair and Clutch, right?
Yeah, I'm going to Clutch. I just got somebody to cover my on-call weekend for Clutch.
Dude, I want to talk about Clutch terrain, so we'll wait on that until I get there. But have you even looked at it?
I looked at the player packet. I saw that it's like three different combinations of things.
Yeah, it's like four things. We'll get to it.
Yeah, there's a lot to that player packet.
How are you hoping to do a Dragon's Lair? And then, what are you thinking might happen with your list going into Clutch? Do you think it's going to like adapt, change at all, or are you just saying screw it? I'm in on this kind of list.
I'm kind of in on this list right now. Like, I can see maybe dropping the second unit of bikes and tweaking like small things here and there. Make something else happen, but I think five units of Sagittarum are pretty locked in.
So six rounds, are you trying to, I think I got six at the last Dragon's Lair open, so are you trying to like match me, beat me? How are you trying to do?
Oh man, I don't know. I'm just trying to break even, my guy.
I'm gonna be honest, like, as an Elves player, which is the only reason I'm not attending the event, because I don't enjoy having to play around the terrain in that capacity. I did wildly good for like literally my best finish on the year. And I did decide to not go back because of the terrain. So if anyone's listening to this as wondering like, why didn't Chad sign up, or, you know, it's any of the organizers or judge staff listens to this afterwards, it's not really anything personal. It's just I don't enjoy having to micromanage my movement to begin with, and I have to do it exponentially more on your boards. So
yeah,
I mean, it's a fair assessment. If I feel like I'm gonna have a bad time, then you know, I'll just do something else that weekend. But how are you hoping to do at the event?
I want to at least break even. Like I said, I haven't been playing a whole lot, so I just kind of need to knock the rust off.
And I think you have a good list to do that. Like we were saying, I mean, it's a pretty kind of straightforward style of play. The benefits of picking emissaries and having access to Conservi in the capacity that you do also lend themselves to the reason that you pick certain secondaries. And so it's the whole game plan is kind of folded kind of nicely in a package for you, as long as you built the list right.
Right.
So I'm in on it, and I think I think a 3-3 finish would be, I mean, pretty bog standard for Custodes, but I think it's the kind of list that can easily do better.
Yeah. I mean, Custodes did get a few buffs recently, so we'll see how it goes. Like, we're not locked to once per game for Emperor's Auspice and all that anymore, so.
Right. So, I do want to pivot to Clutch, since we're on the subject, and you were saying, because it's the next thing that, like, I'm kind of looking at a list for, and I want to get my mindset on that, but I think the terrain is probably one of my favorite setups that I've seen in the Houston area, because it's very non-discriminatory. Like, you're gonna have, it could be any one of us, we're gonna have at Clutch the kind of tournament where you somehow stayed on the exact same type of terrain. I hope that Colin, if you're listening to this, Colin McDade's the organizer of this event, if you're listening, and I'll probably just message you about it, I genuinely think that you should randomize the tables, because that's the only way this is going to work right.
Well, so
I don't think tables should be ranked.
Right. So, yeah, I agree. Randomized all the way through down to the bottom. But, like, also randomized pairings for the first, like, three rounds.
Oh.
Like, wins and random.
Oh, you cut out real quick. What was that?
Oh, I was just saying on top of the randomized terrain throughout the tables, I would say go ahead and just do wins and random for the pairings for the first three rounds.
Yeah, for sure.
Then it's pretty unlikely for you to be stuck on the same table for three rounds.
So, and let me explain the terrain. So there's Clutch City terrain, which I would describe as, that was what we played on previously, where I went 0-3 and got best Eldari, which is sweet.
Yeah.
But
0-3 at a 6-round event.
Yeah, I went 0-3. I mean, it always falls near my birthday weekend. So again, if I'm not having a good time, I mean, I'll just,
yeah,
just get drunk. So Clutch City terrain to me is smaller, sharp angled pieces that could be utilized correctly by very movement-oriented armies, but otherwise not, I don't want to say sparse, but sparser than you would see with other terrain setups. And so that's how I would describe Clutch City terrain, is a lot of like what you would imagine is like a V shape almost, but kind of take it down to a 45 degree angle. Going on to, so that's one type of table you set up, and they're going to be randomized every four tables, right? So it's going to be like this setup, setup B, setup C, setup D, setup A, setup B, you know, all throughout the event. The next type of terrain setup that you can get is GW terrain, just as you know it. Just, you've played on it, you've seen it, some event that you have been to has utilized it. It just as it is, GW terrain. And then the next type of setup that you can get is Frontline Gaming player placed terrain.
You could I didn't even see that one.
You could just get a Frontline Gaming player placed terrain table. That's actually a possibility that your round, while the person next to you is playing on GW terrain against their opponent, you were playing on player placed terrain and have to go through the motions of doing player placed instead.
I don't know that my brain's prepared for like one round to be like, oh, here's your GW terrain. The next, you have
you're
going to
walk up to every table and start picking up terrain pieces, and they're like, what are you doing? It's supposed to be where it's at.
Yeah, and it's going to be like, oh no.
And then the last type of table that you can get down to the measurement is WTC tables. So the European, there's like a bigger V in your deployment zone, and then there's multiple smaller ruins that pivot out to the middle, and then the middle is just open. Like WTC has been remarkably hailed as probably the, or the UKTC. That terrain has been hailed as probably one of the fairest terrain setups that exists. Yeah. So you could play on any of these. So Clutch City Terrain, GW, Frontline Gaming, and WTC. Brandon, what do you make of this madness?
Man, like I said, my brain's just not going to be ready for it. I'm just going to go and throw dice and hope for the best. I mean,
well, and with the type of lists that you're talking about bringing, I think you'll that's actually great because it's a list that can survive on more sparse terrain.
Yeah,
but it's also a list that like doesn't hate GW terrain, and then it's also a list that can be advantageous with Frontline Gaming and cut angles correctly. So
right,
I like it.
It's a really all-rounder list, I feel like. So, like, between the Sagittarum and all the Salvos and everything, the one Dreadnought, there's plenty of shooting to go around. And even though it's mostly shooting infantry and stuff like that, like, the Sagittarum are no slouches in combat either.
Right.
They're 4 attacks each, strength 5, AP 2, 1 damage apiece. Like,
they have AP? What?
It's AP 2, yeah, because they have they got the knife.
Oh, okay, yeah. That's good.
Yeah. That's taking Space Marines to 5 ups now.
Well, so let me talk about the commitment that I'm making on this episode. So, I, Chad Stubblefield, have decided, looking at all the changes and everything that's going on, to just, in majors or larger, so I'm not committing to this at RTTs or anything like that, right? At majors or larger, I'm going to play Harlequins for the entirety of a year. Like an actual, like, make an effort to see where
the
I can
go.
The
whole thing?
The whole thing, no matter what happens.
Just Harlequins.
Just Harlequins.
Not,
yes, sir.
Not Eldor, not...
Nope. Once we get to 10th edition and they say Harlequins aren't a faction anymore, that's the only thing that, like, hard takes me out of this decision.
Oh, but, wow.
But, like, I'm committed to it. I'm committed to seeing how far I can grow in a category, because looking at yourself in the scope of the entire ITC is kind of this like insane thing to do, because you're competing with people that literally live together and contest every single day, and like that's all they do and they live and they breathe it.
Yeah.
So I would rather just see where I can go in my faction. I understand that Mike Porter is in my faction. But realistically, can I get there to where my name pops up, you know?
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
And so, that's what I'm looking at. And I think I have a good starter list for it. Lists aren't due, I think, until like for Clutch. When are they due? Oh God, I didn't even look at that.
Oh shoot. It's probably not yet soon, right? It's probably like
probably
a
like
week,
a week
or
before.
Two.
Yeah, a week or two before. And so, lists are going to be due soon, so I think I'm pretty locked into this. I've been looking a little bit at where the meta is going in terms of what kind of armies are performing and underperforming for the limited data that we have. And I'm going to take something very similar to a list that I played last year at the Dragon's Lair Open, which is just, it's boats. It's just boats and clowns.
I think that's the way to play them now.
Yeah, so for anyone that doesn't know, it's kind of like, what do you feel like is the biggest detriment or like bad thing that happened to Harlequins in the previous update? And the answer is that their invuln went to a 5-up invuln. And then you look at it and you're like, wait, is that it? When you really examine it, you're like, I'm looking at the faction and I'm going, oh, that's the only... That's the only change, right? Like, that's the only kind of bad thing that happened. They actually pulled back some things. Yeah, they increased them in points, but they actually gave us...
You get fire and fade again, right?
So the fire and fade can be used as many times as your heart desires. The Death Jester, that triple explodes, and then you change the die to a 6, now exists again.
Oh, they retconned that too? I didn't even notice that.
So now instead of a 20-point upgrade, it's a 40-point upgrade, which takes the Death Jester to 110 points, which is well worth it.
Yeah, it's still worth it.
That's insane. For you get to roll first. So you roll, And then something that, like, if there's a one there, you just change it to a six and that triple explodes.
Right.
This is a gun that ignores lookout, sir. It's AP2 base. It's strength six base. Like,
it's this, shuriken. Like,
yeah, this dude's bonkers good. And then they gave us full mirror architect back. Your whole, everything within six, nine, if you have the shadow stone of the shadow seer, counts as being 6 inches further away. It's not core locked like it was before. It's before they made it core locked, and they made you pick in your command phase.
Unit. Yeah.
Yeah. Pick a unit in your command phase. It's just back to the glory of being an aura.
It's like a really high points cost for that one now, though, isn't it?
It's doubled. So what they did is they doubled both of them. So it's 60 points on top of your 100 point psyker that most armies weren't touching. And I would argue to say that like 160 is not a bad points cost for what the Shadow Seer can do.
It's still worth it. It's like at that points cost where it's like where you start thinking about it, though.
Well, and where it's especially worth it, I think it's worth it everywhere because you have your shenanigans to make your units untargetable outside of 12 in the melee list. Right. Where I think it's at its most worth it, though, is in a light list where you're telling people, hey, because light still has all of its bad detriments, and it's still, I think, the best. Outside of 18, but really 12 around this gal, you can't hit me on better than force.
Right.
Yeah, 18, so it goes to, 12.
Yeah, it's 12.
Math is hard. And so you still get that benefit of it. And also the distance, like the average distance I've realized on guns that are not like guard indirect, you can play around that almost as if it's a charge radius. And then you're saying, how do you play around melee armies? You still have your strat, your 1 CP runaway 6 inches strat, like one of the best strats in the entire codex.
Yeah.
And
I think it's one of the best strats like in the game almost.
Well, and you have your troop master that can heroic an additional 3 inches. Like let me go over my list for clutch because I think I'm pretty locked into it. So starting off the list, it's of course an Arcs of Omen detachment. I am light Harlequins. I have a single Shadow Seer with Mirror of Minds, Shards of Light, so kitted out for mortal wounds, and Mirror Architect. And Mirror Architect's that aura that's going to allow me to count as 6 inches further. Everything within six of her counts as being 6 inches further away than it actually is. My Warlord is the 3 CP troop master. I mean, he costs 3 CP in every list. So this guy, D3 plus 3 advance, plus 6 to his charge rolls. Player of light, so he can heroic 6 and he gets plus 1 attack on the charge or heroic, and then he's gonna have a bunch of attacks. He's gonna go up to 7, hitting on 2s, full rerolls to wound because it's the relic blade that you've chosen that does that, ignores invulns on a 5+, does 3 damage. This guy mercs. I mean, he's threat radius is like the board. He does the same thing in every single game. He at least like kills 1 to 2 units and then he dies.
Yeah, he goes and does his job.
Yeah, he does his job for 115 points. I mean, he well trades up. So for 105 points, I have a troop master with the relic storied sword. So for anyone that hasn't seen this, this guy has 6 attacks.
I really like the storied sword.
The storied sword's so cool. So his 6 attacks become auto hits because he's holding a giant flaming sword and swinging it at you. And then this is a strength 5 minus 3 AP because it replaces the power sword, 2 damage blade that you have upgraded your troop master to have Veiled King. So he always wounds non-vehicle, non-monsters on a 2+. This guy mulches infantry units.
Yeah.
He's a blender. This dude runs into anything that's walking on its feet and just, like, annihilates all of them. It's great.
He runs into things, like, not on their feet, like on bikes.
Yeah.
And seeds them, too.
He likes bikes, too, for sure. Next, with basically the same loadout, so 2 fusion, 2 neuro, and then some combination of 1 to 2 blades, we have 7 5-man troop units. You know them. You love them. They have a ton of attacks. We have put kisses or caress on varied units. The kisses are going to allow me to sixes to wound our immortal in addition to a max of six. And then the caresses are going to allow me to ignore invulns where that matters. Things like orcs that are in a current state of a law, tyranids, other elf armies, certain Votan, things that depend on their invulns, right? With storm shields in terms of, you know, depending on how you vary your AP or what else runs into that thing.
Right.
Next, in the elite slot, we have three character elites because the only elites in the Harlequin army are characters.
That's right. I always forget about that.
So we have a solitaire, no upgrades on the solitaire. The solitaire gets me behind enemy lines one turn and just kind of does its thing. I mean, that's what a solitaire is. That's what it does. It's going to now mulch a few more things in infantry than it was before because its AP matters a little bit more. And that's about it. I mean, solitaire's like average start radius is 22 inches and it goes. The thing I like about Harlequin characters is they go and they do the job.
Yeah.
I haven't met a Harlequin's character that doesn't, like, perfectly fulfill its role.
See, and that's the thing. So, kind of on a tangent, but same stuff. But I think that's what's really interesting about where Harlequins are going to be at and go in the current meta is, sure, they got this nerf for the invulns going up, and everybody's like, oh, they're just going to fall apart. Most of the time, Harlequins fell apart anyway.
Yeah.
And on top of that, most people should have noticed by now. Behind enemy lines changed.
Oh my god, it's amazing.
And
let me tell you that deadly performance literally has one of the same boxes that you're supposed to check.
Yeah.
It literally says, are you in your opponent's deployment zone? Like, I'm amazed by the scoring potential of Harlequins right now.
Yeah, because it's just, like, the main things you're going to be trying to do in Harlequins now, I think you're going to be a little less offensive, and you're mostly going to be based on your movement and what you're actually charging into, because I think deadly performance, you mostly just try to mix in with behind enemy lines. Just
so it's the things you want to do with deadly performance, because you never want to bank on killing two units and shooting, or killing two units in melee.
Right.
So now all you need to do, which is the normal pace of playing 40K, because you don't want your opponent to get a 12, is you need to flip an objective that you didn't hold at the start of the turn, and you need to be in your opponent's deployment zone. If you take behind enemy lines, you need to be in your opponent's deployment zone. It's a redundancy in game plan, which means there's less decision points.
And like I said, now behind enemy lines is just, I feel like, an auto 15 for Harlequins.
It's an auto 15 for most armies, actually. Like, behind enemy lines is insane.
Don't you get CP from behind enemy lines now if it's a troop?
If it's
as
a troop, yeah.
Like,
yep, my whole army.
This is crazy for Harlequins.
It's just the list, yeah. Is anything in my list in your deployment zone? Yeah, it's cool. So we've got the solitaire, which is meant to fulfill that role in a turn, right? In a pinch, it's all that runs out and dies. And it doesn't necessarily die. It's now on a 4-up invuln, but it's as long as you run it into like a rhino or something, then you really don't care.
Yeah, then the solitaire does fight.
Yeah, it does. In the turn that you blitz, you can run it into any infantry unit in the game, and it probably kills through it, unless it's like a 10-man.
Yeah, like you go through like intercessors and all that pretty easily.
Yeah. So I have a Death Jester. It's the sniper boy. He has Rift Ghoul, so I flip-flopped on this, but I think I've locked in Rift Ghoul. This is one of two Death Jesters, the one I've already named. It's the guy that you flip a die to a six and he triple explodes, and I've had events where I rolled like 6-6-1 for his hits, and I turned the one into a six, and suddenly this dude just pumped 12 sniper shots into your character.
I remember the moment we figured that out, because it was like one of your first games with the new codex.
Yeah.
And
dude's insane.
We were like reading the rules and we're like, oh, you choose one to be a six. And then we reread it and we're like, oh, no, you roll first. Then you make a six. I was like, wow.
Yeah, that was our Codex review episode. We like realized it while reading the book.
Yeah.
And so we have that guy. This other guy I have as Rift Ghoul. So there's two things I could have done. I either make him, you can't fire Overwatch and you get -2 to your movement guy, or I make him Rift Ghoul guy, and on wound rolls of a 4+, he does a mortal in addition. Now, I think, and here's my logic, I think I want to be able to position both, because the range is ridiculous. It's like 30 inch range. I think I want to be able to position both to look at the same character plus another unit.
Yeah.
And then see what, like, Death Jester that explodes always shoots character, right?
Right.
And then Death Jester with Rift Ghoul either does cleanup duty or starts chewing on another thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's more important to me than, like, turning off Overwatch. I don't think I'm, like, that worried about Overwatch. I can just always charge the thing with the boat first.
Especially now that Flamers got nerfed. I don't think we're going to see much you're going to be worried about running
into. So I can either, like, play around terrain or just charge you with the boat first.
Right.
Yeah, I this is something I've done in the past. I'm not, like, super worried about that line of play being in my mind. So, yeah, I think Rift Ghoul was the correct choice for, like, my playstyle with this list, because it's mainly a shooting list anyways. And then that's it. I mean, there's seven Star Weavers for all the troops, but that's the list. It's like Hero Hammer to the max, and then seven troop units and seven boats, and Shuriken and AP 1-2 damage actually matters again.
So my only question is, how would you feel about at least considering taking out one of the True Masters? Because this is pretty much the list you texted me the other day, right?
Yeah.
I think this is actually exactly the list you texted me the other day.
Yeah, it should be.
How would you feel about taking one of the Troop Masters out and popping in another Shadow Seer? Am I still here?
Yeah, you should be.
Okay.
Showing you here. That's it, right? Because this guy is at... What that does for me is it gives me a CP, which actually allows me to redeploy, because I'm not going to spend the CP elsewhere. Or I could spend that CP on the Shadow Seer and up its aura size so that I can deploy more aggressively and still be further back against shooting armies.
Yeah.
But I don't know what the second Shadow Seer is doing.
I think it, if you need
besides
to,
the secondary.
Yeah. I think that's what I was going for. Is just possibility for psychic secondaries.
So yeah, the secondary doesn't, for anyone that doesn't know, the secondary doesn't cost it doesn't need line of sight, which Interrogate went back to needing line of sight. So it's
great for me.
The Harlequin psychic secondary is now one of the just bog standard best ones. I don't like that it goes up every single time, and it's also going to force movement. So the second Shadow Seer, if you're doing that, I put like Mirror of Minds and Twilight Pathways on her, because I want her to be able to position for a good Mirror of Minds if I need it. And I'm not using any of the blessings aren't going on any core units, because there's no core units that are starting on the board,
right?
And so she can Twilight, she can actually get in range, advance into range to do their Weave Veil, their secondary, and then I can pay one CP for her to action and cast, and then she can cast Twilight Pathways on herself and advance back behind wherever she needs to go. That's interesting. I don't know that it's better though than when I need it in a clutch situation. The second Troop Master that's not as fast will clean up a unit. And so if I need, like, kill two and melee as a requirement for that turn, I think I would rather have access to securing deadly performance more often rather than picking Weave Veil when there is still so many armies that deny amazingly in the meta. So, like, how often am I taking that? Whereas every time I'm going to take deadly performance, so just securing that better. Seems better to me.
Yeah. Like I said, I see your point in it. I just thought it was worth, like, looking into. Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely worth the discussion because I flipped back and forth so many times around that, but I just don't know with the way that this light list kind of wants to swarm your opponent like bees, right? It wants to isolate a weakness in your game plan.
Yeah.
And then I want to move like all seven boats over to that direction and kill like two units. And then you be out of like threat radius with the rest of your army because you mispositioned.
Right.
And I just don't know that slow, grindy Shadow Seer game plan works the way that the list wants to perform.
Well,
like
see,
I said, I'd rather just deadly performance happen every single time.
Right. So I think that's where my mind goes. And the list is like, it's not something where you're go fast. It's more of like, okay, I need to dedicate exactly this much this turn, so I have exactly this much to dedicate next turn. And you have like your whole five turns planned out already. Because it's like, you want to make sure you get to turn five with enough to send into your opponent's deployment zone and flip an objective. So it's like, you're already kind of in that headspace where you're trying to play the perfect five rounds. So it's like, it almost seems like what you're already trying to do.
Yeah, which is true. It's just, I found against certain lists that, like I said, deadly performance cannot be the guarantee that you wanted it to be.
Yeah.
But I've never found a matchup where it's not worth taking.
Oh, right, yeah.
So having that little bit of extra of, like, this guy can, like, because Flamer Sword guy, like I said, I mean, he can pick up every intercessor unit he runs into or whatever. I mean, this dude for sure completes his job for that turn.
That's what I'm saying, though. I feel like the way the list is built, you're always going to flip an objective, and you're always going to be in your opponent's
Not me, man. I'm real dumb.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's the... I'm talking about an assessed weakness in my game plan. Not like every Harlequins player plays this way. Like
it's not like a weakness in the army. It's like my brain's bad.
This is definitely personal preference. Like at one point I'm gonna be like, I'm gonna accidentally get my Warlord Troop Master killed, and then I'm gonna be like, man, I wish I just had one more melee threat, and then I'm gonna look at my solitaire and I'm gonna be like, not you.
Yeah,
because you're not wounding things on twos. And so I don't know, we'll see how it goes, and there's definitely room to shift, and that's the thing that
yeah,
I
you
like.
Got a whole year,
right? Like that's the thing I like to dedicating to one particular thing for the entire year is just seeing how it goes. I think that, also to touch on like Clutch's tournament format, I think it's six rounds, but you only play the sixth round if you're top four.
I think so. I think that's what it ended up being.
Yeah. So it's basically five rounds, for everybody.
Yeah.
For
I mean, it's going to be five rounds for me.
Yeah. It's going to be five rounds for me as well. But yeah, it'll be enjoyable. I'm excited at looking forward to the year. Do you have any I saw you lamenting your work schedule comparative to where events are probably going to be. What other events are you looking at?
So it sucks because I always love going to the Dallas Open.
Yeah, that's
the
one,
first
man.
Big tournament we went to, and I loved it last year, and I wish I
easily
could go
my
again.
Favorite it's easily yeah. My favorite event.
Unfortunately, I'm not probably going to be able to make that one this year, but I did look forward at the, Lone Star Open, LSO.
Yeah, that's a good one. Anytime we go out to Dallas, it's a fun
yeah,
time.
The Dallas guys are great. Just every time we go
the
out there.
The atmosphere is good. It's always, like, decent weather, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it.
Except for that first year where, like, you almost died, but, you know?
Yeah. You know, I still did like decently. I always do decent at Dallas too. It's probably why I like it so much.
Yeah,
it's like this past year, eight rounds, I went 5-3, and then I think the previous year I was like 2-1, and then dropped.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Weird. You were like just dying the first year though,
yeah,
because of the weather,
diseases, and with weather and all that.
But
So LSO for sure.
I'm gonna try my hardest to make LSO since I can't do the other. I can't do Alamo, and I can't do Dallas Open most likely. So I'm gonna definitely try and shoot for LSO since I'm not able to do any of the other Dallas ones.
What about Warzone? What about all the other
Warzone? It looks like I'll be able to hit all the in-town ones.
Cool.
Like that was one of the things with Clutch. I was like, it's an in-town one. I have to go. So I got somebody to cover my work schedule for me for that weekend.
Right.
Like, I'm going to have to cover one of his weekends, but, like, I think it's worth it to go to the tournament. Colin kept posting how he was running out of tickets, so I was like, well, I need to figure this out, like, now.
I think,
Which I think he's sold out now, if I'm not mistaken.
Is. Yeah, Clutch sold out. So I think that Wyda and I were talking about it. Wyda's my girlfriend, for anyone that doesn't know. Wyda and I were talking about it, and I think my event schedule looks like Clutch City, Dallas, Alamo, LSO, there's a possible another like out of state one somewhere in there. We were looking at that. Like Cruise Hammer looks interesting, but you know, that's an entire week.
Yeah, and that's like having to pay for a cruise too.
Yeah. But yeah, for being me, held hostage like... while people drain your money. We're not sure about that one. Maybe one of the two California FLG events.
That'd be cool. Like SoCal.
So yeah, they have Bay Area Open and SoCal now.
Mm.
And then we're looking at LVO for the following year as well.
I would love to try LVO next year.
It's just a beautiful, you know, like event to be at, and you're just surrounded by like everybody in the world that gives a damn the most.
Yeah. Well, that's like something I was talking with my wife about. I was like, I kind of want to go do it. And she's like, oh, you want to go to Vegas? And I was like, well, not necessarily go to Vegas. I want to go to this event.
Yeah. I mean, every place you eat at is still going to be like $20 minimum, but like $20 per person minimum.
Yeah. Well, what I mean is like, I don't want to go like specifically to experience Vegas. I want to go specifically to experience
like Warhammer in Vegas, World Finals, like all the greatest players hanging out and drinking out of shoes and playing for steak. It was rolling off
in the semifinals to see who goes to the finals.
Yeah, I mean, whatever you need. So definitely LVO, LSO, Warzone, probably WarGamesCon, because that one's in Texas.
I was thinking about like WarGamesCon too, because I'm available for that one as well.
Yeah, we'll probably end up going to WarGamesCon because it's in Bastrop, right? So it's not like anywhere where
Far or anything.
It's not like staying in Dallas where we just accept that the hotels are expensive. We're enjoying ourselves so much. But I don't know. Like, Wyda's thing was, like, as many as you want. And I was like, oh, okay.
Well, somebody has to be responsible here, so.
Yeah.
You're like, as many as you want. Oh, no.
Yeah. ATC, maybe. That one's, like,
Where's
really...
Where's ATC at?
American Team Championships, 40K. I can find that answer for you real quick. I am in front of a computer.
Because it's, like... I am restricted by, like, how many times I can travel out of state.
I don't understand what that means. Is that, like, a federal thing? Or
No. Just financially-wise.
Oh, okay.
Like,
Jesus. What do you got going on, Brandon? So, July 28th and 30th, but where? Because that was the thing, too, is it kind of falls in a weird, like, dead zone for events. Because they're all, for us, in Texas, they're all in the spring and the fall.
Yeah.
We don't really, like, it's weird. Like, late summer, Texans don't want to leave air conditioning, so
Exactly. Well, that's the thing. Everybody from Texas is trying to leave Texas during the summer.
So it is in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
That's not that bad, actually.
Yeah, I think Kevin drove last year. Yeah. So whether we take our own team, they also have like 5-man suites. Like the hotel they rent out has like very splittable accommodations.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and Kevin was telling me, so it like wasn't that expensive, and it's $500 per team, but that's $100 per player because it's 5-man teams.
That's normal tournament entry.
Yeah, and so I don't know. That one seemed interesting, and then Wida said Warzone Atlanta seemed interesting because I know that's like a pretty important one in terms of it's the one that like. It's kind of like a little mini LVO. A lot of the same people go to it. There's like an optional third day.
Right.
Yeah. So
that's what's interesting to me. Like it's the opposite of LVO.
Yeah.
Like LVO's top 16 or top 8 cut for day 3. Atlanta is just like, oh, do you want to play a third day? Cool. Pay extra for this little mini pre-tournament.
Yeah, like you play on Friday.
Yeah, like play this RTT and
well, you're... and it's weird because I think it goes 3-2-3 or something like 3 or yeah, I think it's 2-3-2. So you play 2 rounds on that like that War Masters challenge. It's some combination of
that. Is it 2 rounds?
It's some weird combination where it's either 3-2-3 and staggered like that or vice versa. But I know that players generally enjoy it because there's like a day in the middle where there's less pressure, or like multiple days.
That's
kind of
nice,
pressure.
Actually.
Yeah. So I don't know. We're looking at like a bunch of them, and because it's wasn't really that bad last time, and I don't know. I'm on. I think like my second raise or something. So we're we're doing aight.
Need your boss to have a conversation with my boss.
I'll get Kevin right on that.
Oh jeez.
But yeah, I think that's good for today. I mean, we rambled somehow for an hour, which is cool.
Yeah, that's just how my brain works.
Yeah,
I still got another hour in me.
Yeah, I will just fill space with whatever is necessary to you know make it happen. And that's what we did today. So hopefully y'all enjoyed the episode. Check us out on Patreon as Table Talk Official on Patreon. I don't chill it that much, but it's there. And I guess I'm supposed to if it exists, you know.
Yeah.
If you feel free to reach out to me. I've had an outpouring of like Eldar players that have added me on Facebook and started reaching out to me. And I'm cool with it. I don't know where y'all thought I was an authority on anything, but it's cool. Yeah, well, as I've told multiple of those people, I'm what I would consider to be an above average list writer and a below average player. So,
got me beat in one category.
Like last year, I think I ended up like 52% on the year. So that's cool. that's about where I am as a person. The problem is that when I go to events, it's either all or nothing. Like I'm either like X2, X1, or I literally went 0-3 and still ended up best in faction.
Yeah. So,
you know. But yeah, Brandon, thanks for coming on. Thanks for talking.
Yeah, absolutely.
And everybody keep on rolling dice and have a good start to your Warhammer season.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you for listening to Table Talk. Join us each week for more competitive Warhammer 40K content, reviews, interviews, and all-around strategy discussions. This is a Team Eden production sponsored by Eden Games, located in Humble, Texas. For articles, coaching sessions, and all your wargaming needs, go to edengames.com. Your wargaming adventures begin here. edengames.com.